This is the Inside Data Center Podcast. We talk to the people who power the data center sector to give you insider info on everything happening in DC today. Here's your host, Andy Davis.
Welcome to the Inside Data Center Podcast. Today I'm joined by Doug Lowe, CEO at KO Data. Good afternoon, Doug.
Andy, hello. Good to be with you.
Great to have you on, and so soon into your new role at KO Data as well. So perfect timing, as we were talking about before we went online. Before we go into all of that, though, do you want to just give everyone a quick introduction of who you are and what your role is at KO Data?
Sure. The fun thing about my role being global or international often is my name is pronounced, my surname is pronounced differently everywhere you go. In the United States, it's Lowe, and my family decided to call it Lowe, and in Germany, it's Löwe, and in Spain, it's Löwe, and in England, it can be just about anything. But I've been in the industry from a data center perspective for 14 years, and despite this distinctly retained American accent, I've actually now lived in London or in Europe in general for the last 30 years. I like to say I moved here when I was 10 or 20, but no one believes that anymore with this gray hair. But big picture, I've always been passionate about technology, especially when it solves for not just business problems, but also helps society advance and move forward. I've been just real pleased to be able to immerse myself in the data center industry, not only for providers such as Interaction and a brief stint at Yonder, but also working for Macquarie gave me a real perspective on the investor sentiment and being able to understand the business drivers from asset management perspective. So when KO Data tapped me on the shoulder to join them to lead the organization, I felt I'd really culminated my career in terms of location, experience, and also just having just lived and breathed so many trends that are going on in the data industry that it was a perfect home for me to join the organization at the beginning of this year.
Excellent. And before we go into all of that, I'd just like to go back to the beginning of your career, because I love to hear how people ended up in this wonderful world of data centers. So how did you first start your career, and when did you make the transition into data centers?
Yeah, I like I said, I've always been passionate about technology. When I graduated from high school, I wanted to go get a degree, and I decided to do. At first, I thought I wanted to be an aeronautical engineer, but I realized I'd rather fly in airplanes than actually design them. So I pivoted from aeronautical engineering to computer science, and so my career has always been technology based. I started off in telecommunications with CompuServe Network Services. That was back when packet data networks were all the rage, and even when I moved to New York on my 26th birthday, I spent 5 years in Manhattan and convinced JP Morgan to outsource their entire frame relay network to CompuServe at the time. Loved New York. If you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. So I decided to use that as an opportunity to, with CompuServe, move to Europe. And loved living in London. And of course, as I said, I've remained ever since. But I was with UUNET when it was weaved in and with the whole WorldCom acquisition trail. Fortunately, I got out just in time before WorldCom exploded and went to Cable and Wireless and helped them with their rollout of MPLS network. So I've spent a lot of time in the telecommunications space, which is really, really important when we get into KO Data. One of the things I loved about KO Data is the second word, data. It's all about where the data flows and where it's processed, where it's crunched, where it's inferred, where it's generated. And so spending that telecommunications career background was vital to allow me to then say, okay, let me do a little bit of software. So I did a little software with iPass for a while, but I realized I really like infrastructure. And so it was great to be able to have Interaction tap me on the shoulder, because it was already in 13 countries, but it was acting as almost like a unit trust, and it needed somebody that could help present Interaction as a cohesive overall data center solution. So that's why I spent 8 years under the mentorship of David Ruberg. Unfortunately, he passed away last year, but what a great experience to be able to have that foundation. So short answer, telecommunications for a while, learned the international trade in that respect, moved into software for a while so I could really understand, again, you know, data, and then in the data center for the last dozen plus years.
Excellent. And before we go into KO Data, I love when I talk to people like yourself that have that kind of extensive experience in the industry, just to see how it's changed across that period. It's very difficult to answer that question because it's still changing today. But what would you say, quickly, like the main changes you've seen across your career?
It's become more and more complex, without a doubt. The pace of change has actually accelerated, which I'm not sure people thought that was even, you know, doable. And the scale, both in terms of, you know, how big these data centers are or can be, and also the amount of capital that's required to be able to bring these data centers to their full potential. And therefore, it's creating an imperative for all of us to be able to be very, very talented at partnerships. And that can be anywhere from technology partnerships, but also equity or financing partnerships, to where you say, hey, this is a huge opportunity. It's not without risk. Therefore, bring in like-minded compatriots that can each bring to the table certain aspects of the financing mechanism, whether it be an equity partner or a lender, and be able to share with them, you know, mechanisms and approaches to being able to both share in the investment, but also clearly share in the upside when the project is successful.
Interesting. And that brings us on to today. And I think you mentioned before we came along, 90 days, is it, into your new role?
Coming up on 90 days, yes. It feels like it's been a little bit longer. As I like to say to David Bloom, the executive chairman, I did, you know, make sure that before I started, I had some coffee chats just to be able to make sure I was able to familiarize myself with the, you know, with the team and where we're going. And frankly, I think that's actually a very wonderful way to get started in an organization is before you start, is just make sure you're getting to know that person, getting to know the environment. It just allows you to be able to, you know, hit the proverbial ground running. But yes, officially, you know, I started at the beginning of the year. We're knocking on April's door very soon here, which is, of course, the end of the, you know, the fiscal year. But it has been, I've worked for several companies. I think this is one of the best starts I've ever had, just because the team has already planted some wonderful seeds in the ground. It's now about focus and, frankly, follow through and execution on some very interesting projects that we have in the queue.
Yeah, definitely. And what was it that attracted you to KO Data? I know they're an organization that a lot of us in the UK will know very well. Maybe some of the listeners in the States or overseas may not have heard of. But from you've got that broad sort of knowledge of the industry. So what was it particularly that attracted you to the company?
I think it's a combination of the culture, but also the time frame. And then implicit with that is the inflection point that they're in, or now I can say that we are in. And that is the fact that it's not a startup. They've been, you know, they've been delivering now, for 10 years as a company. It's definitely now a scale up, or it can be a scale up based on the desire to execute. And that's, I emphasize the word can. Fortunately, the equity participants, our shareholders, with Infratel in New Zealand and obviously Legal in General here in the UK, they're up for it. But what they just want, and rightfully so, is a bold business plan that is backed with and underpinned by some secular trends or some very specifics that allows us to be able to say, yep, this is de-risked. This is something that makes a lot of sense, and let's proceed. And that's what attracted me. If you go in and it's a private equity firm that really doesn't understand the space, there's some inherent risks with that. If it's an organization that doesn't have a culture of really wanting to, you know, have fun, in this case, have fun is not, you know, beanbag chairs and ping pong tables. This is a team that wants to win and has the parts that, you know, roll up to being successful. But all of those ingredients were there. It's focused in on the right customer segment. You know, the fact that its heritage is AI, not just AI for the sake of AI, but actually having the data centers engineered for these very complex workloads. And so these data centers are designed for that. So the foundation for design is in place. The foundation for the customers, i.e. the AI customers, the fact that, KO Data was able to convince NVIDIA to put its supercomputer in its Harlow data center, not only just doing that period was a huge win, but to be able to actually implement that in 18 months during a pandemic, those stories inspire people. They inspired me. But the fact that the company is not and will not rest on its laurels, it's about also attracting the hyperscalers to be participatory in that ecosystem of AI workloads, cloud workloads, and choice enterprises was a great foundation. Now it's just a matter of, frankly, copying and pasting that, onto the continent and to additional locations here in the UK.
Yeah, I obviously talked to quite a lot of developers and operators, and KO Data is slightly different in the way that you already in that HPC AI region, that marketplace, whereas a lot of the others are obviously looking to move into it. So you that's something that a lot of people might not understand, that the fact that KO are already in that HPC space through the universities, through the NVIDIA program, etc. So you're already there and you've got that knowledge base to then further grow into it.
Absolutely. It is an extremely strong foundation if you're able to really handle, the cooling requirements of AI workloads. If you are solving for the pace in which those underlying technologies will change, if it's good enough for AI, it's surely good enough for the enterprise space and the cloud space as well. Because we're starting to see an awful lot of AI workloads embedded in the cloud or vice versa, and being able to have that technology leadership and understanding and production workloads already in your data center bodes very well for attracting, it's the classic mass attracts a mass.
Yeah, and you mentioned new regions as well. And obviously, it wasn't too long ago, it seems like not that long ago, that Manchester was announced. And obviously, we're seeing quite continuous updates with that around an approval for planning and all the public consultation, which again, I've commented on some of the posts. I think the community involvement on that project is brilliant. We need to see more of that, actually holding these community programs to involve them in the project. So we're not the big bad data center being built in the back garden or backyard, depending on who's listening.
No, I'm glad.
Where else? No, go on.
I was just saying, I'm glad you mentioned the community aspect. It's been a strong value for me and in previous companies, but being able to be a truly good corporate citizen and being able to be participatory in helping level up in the case of Manchester and actually meaning it is extremely powerful.
So the question I was going to ask based on the Manchester development was, you mentioned other regions, you're moving into new regions, and I don't expect you to give away all your secrets, but where is it you're looking to take KO Data?
No, the one thing I love about Manchester is the fact that I've referred to it as our continental European slingshot. So we're going to build on our super success that we have in both Harlow as well as Slough, pull back in terms of getting that rubber band tight up to Manchester. 350 million pounds is not trivial. It's going to allow us to be able to execute a 40 megawatt data center there. And with the applause and support and excitement of the community because of the fact that it's going to be, AI workloads helping level up this country and not have everything be in London, but finally have Manchester be part of it. But that momentum of having two dots, London and Manchester in the UK, is something that I'm passionate about replicating to be able to do, Frankfurt and Berlin, Madrid and Barcelona, and be able to have those six dots which really, really bring forth an incredible opportunity for our customers to be able to say, "Hey, we love what you did with us and for us in London. Let's do that in a multitude of locations." And then you have a significant seat at the table with those customers because you're not just, a single data center operator in a single location. You become particularly relevant because you're able to really, connect the dots literally and be able to solve a multitude of business problems at scale. We'll probably round that out with something in Amsterdam, just because, as you're well aware, Andy, the moratorium in Amsterdam caused a lot of pause in the Netherlands. And fortunately, even though, you know, since KO Data is 10 years old, there were some seeds we planted in terms of getting in the queue for power. So we're not, you know, this is not a startup environment. You know, I'm here to help accelerate and drive this forward and move the business forward at pace. But because Amsterdam is, the Dutch are very progressive, and if they can have some interesting AI workloads, although yes, there was a moratorium, if you're bringing new technology, innovation that will influence or inspire the local populations, and if you're also able to help bring, you know, power to some homes and help the community. Again, just like in Manchester, we had a community approach. We're going to have the same approach in everywhere we go. All of a sudden, at a generative AI hub in the Netherlands, upwards of 200 megawatts is not just a twinkle in the eye. It's a real, real possibility. So we're gonna definitely continue with, you know, at least two markets per country. But in the Netherlands, we think we have something, an interesting project that could allow us to be able to proceed, you know, upwards of 200 megawatts for a generative AI hub. Again, leveraging our credentials in the AI space, but also then with community support and in partnership, shoulder to shoulder with our customers, be able to move into some very creative markets that maybe in the past were a little bit, if you will, tired or exhausted just because of cloud taking up significant portions of the footprint.
It's interesting you say about the AI generative hub, because I was having conversations this week with investors in APAC around a similar type idea, that where there is this hub for AI processing, but like multiple organizations centralizing all their needs or their services basically within one hub. Do you see that's where AI will start to head to?
I think you're going to see a classic bifurcation. There will be certain AI workloads that are going to be able to be crunched or processed just about anywhere. And clearly, you know, the current thinking from an industry perspective is we can do it in the Nordics because it's near cheap, sustainable power. But realistically speaking, fairly soon, a lot of the AI workloads are still going to have to solve for data sovereignty. There's just going to still be a desire that you're going to crunch my data in the country in which it's going to eventually be inferred. So you'll still need to generate it in country, but without a doubt, the inference, the ongoing collaborative sharing of information from an AI perspective will be highly distributed, and particularly in Europe versus the U.S. because we just don't have, you know, the sheer volume of land and therefore 200 or 300 or 500 megawatts of power concentrated in a given location. There'll be some exceptions to the rule, but instead of penalizing yourself or harming yourself by trying to be able to find that magical one, you know, that magical silver bullet, embrace distributed compute in the AI world. And, if you're able to be as our vision is to be in Spain and in Germany, and in the United Kingdom, you're picking up a very large number of populations. And then it appears to be that just like Amsterdam was able to solve for a regional play, there'll be specific workloads that'll be just fine to be in a location. But proximity to those populations is still very, very important. There's going to be certain applications and certain workloads that do need to be closer to the eyeballs versus being remote.
Interesting. Yeah, AI is one of those. It's you can talk about it forever. You can try and work out how it's going to look, but I think we're all learning. We're all learning as we go at the moment with the impact that it's going to have on the sector.
We sure are, and that's why it's fun to be able to have these customers be existing customers. So instead of us speculating from an academic perspective, we're leveraging the learning, leveraging the relationships that we've had in place for several years. We speak fluent AI today. Now it's a matter of replicating where we're able to help our customers with this geographic expansion that we've just been talking about.
Yeah, and you've obviously touched on quite a lot. You've done a lot in the first nearly 90 days as well, by the sound of things. But other than the geographic expansion, what's the future look like for KO Data?
Sometimes it's healthy and helpful to talk about what you're not going to do, and as much as where you're going to focus. And by virtue of the fact that, you know, we've already have some very interesting momentum in the UK and Germany and in Spain. And as I said, you know, as a point solution in the Netherlands and Amsterdam, we've made a decision where we're not going to, nor do we need to accelerate at this time in places like France or Italy or the Nordics or anywhere in Eastern Europe. There is just significant customer demand from our portfolio of trusted, you know, partners and customers to be able to execute in the markets that I just shared with you. There can be exceptions to that, but I've learned, I guess I'm still the conservative boy from Columbus, Ohio. Sometimes less is more. So we're going to maintain our focus on our customer segment. You know, the AI workloads is our heritage. It's our area of expertise. It gives us a technological advantage because we're solving for complex workloads of today, not yesterday. We're going to continue to focus in on the cloud space. In the enterprise space, I think where we're already starting to see some momentum, in addition to the four financial institutions that we're solving for today, is to recognize that enterprises are going to really embrace AI. And they're going to want to start off with some specific workloads that are going to give them and start moving them up the learning curve. And I was pleased to hear that you can have AI workloads for an enterprise as small as 200 kilowatts to upwards of 2 megawatts. And so if you can build a clearinghouse or an environment for enterprises to be able to have those specific AI workloads, they're going to either want to control that in a private AI environment or a public AI environment. We want to be somewhat indifferent to how and when and where they might want to do that, but to be able to provide the ability for them to do that either with the hyperscalers that choose to put their AI workloads with us, or if the enterprise wants to maintain them separately, because of our experience with some highly scrutinizing financial institutions, we're able to do that as well. So it's AI, cloud, and enterprise, but they're highly correlated and highly interrelated by making sure that we choose to have that be our focused customer segmentation.
Definitely going to be an exciting journey, though, that's for sure. I can tell, I always, whenever we speak, I love your passion, but I can tell you're really passionate about this project as well and where you're going to take things over however many years.
Well, thank you, Andy. What's nice is instead of this being pure strategy and we're thinking about doing this, we're already executing this. So we're just putting some oomph behind it. And we're just pleased that we have customers that are wanting to leverage the experience we've had in AI for the last several years to move forward at pace. And I'm pleased that not only is our equity, you know, institutional investors excited about our journey as well, but our lender, we announced that, you know, the Deutsche Bank refinancing is just giving us a wonderful blend of customer drive, institutional investors that are ready for, you know, capitalizing on our Harlow and our Manchester initiatives in other locations, and a lender who wants to continue with the journey as well. Because it does, as I said at the very beginning of our conversation, Andy, it requires a lot of capital. But I think investors are very comfortable with deploying capital if they know that there are customers that are lined up to join you on that journey. And that is an art more than it is a science. But when you get it right, by, you know, focusing on customers that you just really are solving for their business problems, that's when the magic takes off.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing in the market now that customer is critical now to the investment and to the build. It's become imperative that the whole that triangle needs to be there in order for the investment to come. Whereas previously there was more speculative investment.
Absolutely, and there's still a little bit of needing to take a risk. But at the same time, what you do is it's calculated risk, it's focused risk, and that's why we're really trying to make sure that we're going to be disciplined in our customer segmentation, disciplined in our geography segmentation, and it's all about timing. And even though you might cast a slightly wider net, what you want to do is execute in those locations, you know, based on availability of power, known customer demand. And obviously, you know, time to market as well, because time is still the critical element, and that's why we prioritize based on time to market.
Definitely. Well, I'm looking forward to continuing to watch the journey, I should say. Before we finish up, I just wanted to ask you a couple of, you know, sort of quick fire questions just to get your views on the market at the moment. I ask everyone this question. There's always a lot of challenges in our sector. It seems to be that every year we have, or every month, we have a different challenge knocking on our door. But what do you think are the biggest challenges we face in the industry right now?
Well, I did allude to it earlier, you know, that helping, for example, here in the United Kingdom, genuinely level up and be able to not just solely concentrated in London. It's Manchester's time. And likewise, that's also true in Germany. You know, Frankfurt's been a wonderful hub. I enjoyed my time in interaction where significant amounts of my customers chose not just Germany, but also that particular location on Hanauer-Lahnstrasse. But it is time for us to, as an industry, to move some of those workloads, whether they're cloud or AI, to Berlin. And it's important that although, yep, there's been some focus on, you know, Zaragoza in Spain, but, you know, there are still specific workloads and particular applications that need to be in Madrid and in Barcelona. Amsterdam, I think, will continue to be a wonderful leadership approach. But I think the thing that a term that we're using that I think is important for the industry to realize, it's also time for us as an industry to explore some new neighborhoods in existing cities. You know, West London is saturated. And so if we can help the industry by establishing a new availability zone in East London and be able to remove some of the strain on the grid and be able to distribute those workloads, I think you're going to see another renaissance or another acceleration as London is being one of the most intense locations for concentrated compute in the world, you know, right up there with, you know, obviously Virginia and Frankfurt. But it requires an industry viewpoint on this and not just have each independent data center service provider pursuing this approach independently.
Definitely. Couple more questions. Sure. If you could ask everyone in the data center sector to start or stop doing one thing, what would it be?
Well, the starting is let's go establish strategic new neighborhoods that allows us to be able to solve for not just enterprises and not just the cloud providers, but also for some creative AI workloads to be able to be distributed. It's just to be open to and make those investments and you know, this is a situation where build it and they will come does apply. I also think it's important for us, completely different vector, but it's really important for us to bring in new people into the industry because we just can't be constantly recruiting from each other. You know, I have the luxury of, you know, there's people that have worked at, you know, Interaction, or they've worked in other locations that are like, hey, Doug, you know, I believe what you're doing at KO Data is fascinating. I'd like to join you. But it is a situation where it's helpful. I mean, we're inspiring students at various universities to, first off, get into the data center industry or technology business. But we have to play more of the long game, which is to encourage people to, you know, and diverse students, too. It would be very helpful in this industry to be able to bring in, you know, more female talent that is either engineering based or otherwise, because we run the risk of entropying, and closed user groups have a tendency over time to die. And so it's important for us to embrace and be able to welcome and bring in people and move them up the learning curve as we move forward. We just can't, you know, constantly be poaching from each other in terms of the talent.
No, and KO Data do some great work as well around entry-level talent and spreading the message of the industry. So I think it's a valid point for obviously UTC, and there's lots of other programs. But
absolutely,
you do a good job, and I know you'll continue to do so. And it brings us on to the last question quite nicely. If you could give one piece of advice to anyone looking to work in the sector, what would it be?
Find somebody that will challenge you and inspire you. It's obviously, you know, the company you work for, but really it boils down to who's the leader, who's that manager, who's the person who every single day is going to nurture you, challenge you, and provide you thought-provoking ways to advance your career. It's served me well. I mean, I have managers that were just absolutely material for my personal and professional growth. And by definition, by virtue, anybody in a long career, you're going to have managers who are less so. And so I encourage, you know, anybody, regardless of their stage of their career, go work for somebody who is going to support you, but also challenge you to be the better you every single day.
Great advice and a great way to finish the podcast. It's great to catch up again, as we were saying earlier, but it's always good to hear from you. And I'm loving the work you're doing at KO Data. And I know that you're going to do a great job. And as I said earlier, I'm going to enjoy watching the journey over the next few years.
Well, Andy, like I said, it's always a pleasure. And let's make it a point to, rendezvous or when some of these become, official in the public domain in terms of some of these initiatives, I think it'll be fascinating to reconvene and keep the lines of communication open.
Yeah, I look forward to sharing your news. And if anyone wants to reach out to you, has got any questions, what's the best way to get hold of you?
My email is, doug.lowy@kodata.com. I have a new assistant that's actually starting on Monday to help me with the volume of outreach, because the outreach is anywhere from industry folks to people that want to get in the industry. So we want to make sure that we're there to help lead this industry, not just from a KO Data perspective, but from a industry perspective, because it's very exciting. As I often say, this industry is fun again. And we want to be able to make sure that we're striking while the iron's hot and welcoming people into the industry, because it's a great place to advance one's career, frankly.
Definitely. Well, thanks for your time. As I said, we'll catch up again soon. We'll have fun soon. And all the best with your journey.
Yeah, take care of yourself. It was a real pleasure. Thanks, Andy.